Cats in Hell, a look back at Saturday Night Live with your hosts, Matt and Keith. Brought to you by Lion's Den Audio Theater. Like and subscribe to Lion's Den Audio Theater for more Lion's Den goodness. And here are your hosts, Keith and Matt.
Saturday Night Live, Season 4, Episode 8, starring Eric Idle. Originally aired on December 9th, 1978. Hello and welcome to SN Hell. My name is Keith. With me, as always, my good buddy Matt. Hello, Matt.
Hello.
Joining us tonight, Adrian, welcome back.
Hello and thank you.
This is your second time joining us for the Eric Idle extravaganza, and you were with us for a Michael Palin as well, weren't you?
I sure was. I'm always happy to be here for a Python or for anyone else.
Really? Yeah. You've done some fun episodes outside of the Python. This is Eric Idle's third time hosting. So far, we've enjoyed his previous stints. We've had varying degrees of appreciation. Adrian has been the kindest, then me, then Matt. So far, we've had no stinkers to date from Eric Idle.
I'm looking forward to it. I honestly don't remember how I liked the last one, but you said I liked it the least of the three of us, huh?
You did like it the least. You gave it a 6.5.
Okay.
Yeah, and your other Eric Idle, you gave it a 6.5. And Adrian was a 9 on the last one and a 7 on the one before that. Pretty positive, actually. We are Eric Idle fans anyway. Tonight's musical guest is an interesting one. It's Kate Bush. This is her first and only U.S. television appearance. I didn't know much about Kate Bush going into it other than little bits and pieces here and there. But I was excited to see her because she is someone who is spoken of very highly by a lot of musicians I thoroughly enjoy. Were you guys excited to see Kate Bush tonight?
I was so pumped to see Kate Bush. My dad was fairly obsessed and had a pretty big crush on Kate Bush, probably from this episode where he first saw her when all the kids were like, oh, Kate Bush is on Stranger Things and all that. I was like, it's not Stranger Things music. That's my living room music. So I was pretty excited to see her.
I was excited to see her, too. I like Kate Bush. I remember she did Rocket Man on the Elton John tribute album, and it was really good.
Elton John, also a fan of Kate Bush, said her music kept him sober when he was cleaning up. So nice wow. Story there. Yeah. Sadly, SNL had another passing in its extended community, I guess. Longtime reporter and champion of the show from day one, author of the tremendous book Live from New York that we use all the time, Tom Shales, passed away this week. You'll probably actually be hearing this in about a month or two after it happened, but very sad to hear the passing of Tom Shales. Matt, you bought the book on the day right before he died, wasn't it?
I bought the book on the day he died.
Or before the word went
out. Well, I didn't know he passed, but like the date of his death is when I got the book.
Yeah, that's weird. Yeah, he was one early champion in the press. There were a lot of early champions in the press, but he's sort of seen as the one that followed the show. So let's go right into the cold opening. For the first time, Dan plays a character named Ray. And Ray is the host of a cable access call-in psychic show. Immediately, it takes me right back to Talk Back with Frank Nolan, because it's the same set and probably the same amount of telephones. And Talk Back with Frank Nolan was chosen by our panel of third chairs and myself and Matt as our favorite sketch from season one. Well deserved. Ray says folks can call in and ask about anything and he'll predict for you. Lorraine calls in as someone who has no money and no job. He says that she'll get a job and some money in about a week. Bill then calls in about his ex-girlfriend wanting to know if she'll come back to him. He says that for a while he'll date someone new and then she'll come back in about a month. Tom Davis calls in saying his sister wants to take some butter and the phone is immediately hung up. Jane calls and says she has a sick friend who wants to know if her friend will get better. Dan says she'll get better in a couple of months. Jane says it was just a trick. She has no sick friend and she laughs at Dan. Dan then predicts that Jane's character will get sick, making Jane horrified. Gilda then calls in and says her favorite show is SNL and she wonders how they are going to start the show this week. Dan gives us a flat, but appropriate, Live from New York at Saturday Night. This was very, very good. It's another sleaze character of Dan's. It's very similar sound and kind of vibe to like your Irwin Mainways and your E-Buzz Millers. But it had the blonde hair that reminded me kind of of Vic from Neighbors. Dan loves these characters, does them excellently. I thought this was a quick and funny cold open. poking fun at the sleazy late night and cable access stuff that was out there, kind of newish at the time. So we're not quite where cable's going to make them very commonplace. But this was, you know, a quick economical way of giving us a good cold open. And I enjoyed this immensely.
I agree with you, Keith. I liked it. It was quick. It was kind of to the point. I love the in about a month or so and how that just kept getting played through it. Thought it was great.
I mean, I guess I thought it was okay. I didn't think it was super. I liked that it was quick. I hated that flat delivery of Live from New York at Saturday night. I fucking hate when they do that. I just, why do you suck the energy out of the show to start the show? But I don't even mind when they just break character. I know that's something that we kind of disagree on.
I think the scary part is how real it was, actually. Not so much today, but I mean, remember like the Miss Cleo mid to late 90s, this sort of stuff was everywhere.
Yes. Yes, yeah, I do. I do appreciate that.
When we go to the intro, only thing to note for me is that Father Guido Sarducci is here. We are now at the monologue. This is going to be quite a lengthy summary. Eric Idle says it's nice to be back, and he looks around with his hands folded and he starts whistling. He says he's really sorry because he's waiting for the opening monologue to be given to him once the writers get a chance to finish it. At SNL, they do a lot of things last minute. So he stands there awkwardly waiting. He secretly thinks the writers are delayed because they do too many drugs. Tired of waiting, he asks Howard Shore to play the wing song My Love Does It Good while Idle goes to investigate where the monologue is. Idle is told that Lauren is in the control room. So he goes into the control room where the control booth crew are all basically joking and laughing. And Eric wanders into a recording booth where Lauren, with a wine glass in hand, is being interviewed by a journalist being played by Tom Schiller. Lauren directs Eric to the back where the writers are. Eric wanders back into the dressing room. We see Garrett there with a guy in a cheetah suit and a horse and some very elaborate characters in some pretty lavish costumes. Eric informs them that the sketch that they're dressed for is cut, and he is then directed to a room where John Belushi is getting what I can only describe as an 80s massage, one of these ones with the hard rubbing and the slapping and the twisting. And Belushi is talking on the phone about his upcoming record. As John is roughed up by his masseuse, he directs Eric to the writer's room, which is essentially an opium den. We have writers sleeping on a triple-decker bunk, Rosie Schuster sucking on a hookah. An announcement is then made that Fred Silverman's disco barbecue has been canceled, and Eric runs into Gilda speaking to an Abraham Lincoln impersonator. Gilda says she heard the monologue went great, and Eric says it didn't happen. Gilda tells him to just go out and ad-lib it because he's a funny guy. Eric considers doing such until Bill Murray comes by and wonders why Eric isn't out there. Eric says he didn't get the monologue. Bill says he's a funny guy and doesn't need the monologue. He grabs Eric in a headlock and starts dragging him out toward the stage, telling him to go up and be funny. Bill says the audience knows you're funny and the monologue is supposed to be funny, so even if it isn't funny, they're all going to laugh. Eric goes up on stage back at home base. He tells a story about his time in Tunisia, filming the latest Python movie, which will go on to become Life of Brian. Eric gets a jar. He says it's about 2,000 years old, and then he throws it on the floor, breaking it. He then does his impression of Tunisian music. He says it's from the Stone Deaf Age. Song tells the story of two star-crossed lovers. The monologue ends as Idle is singing the song, which is essentially like high-pitched wailing, I guess. I was excited to see what he was going to do, and this was an excellent piece for the most part. The meta-ness of the monologue will be explored a lot, like meta stuff and the show within the show type thing. And there's periods, at least as my memory goes, where I think it's explored a bit too much, but it's still brand new here and it's very well done. I always enjoy the bits with these guys from the booth at this stage. They're totally, you know, just being goofballs. And I actually find Dave Wilson is a pretty darn good performer. Backstage stuff was fun. The opium den writer's room was laugh out loud funny for me. I also like the random Abe Lincoln roaming around. The actual monologue bit up on home base, it was kind of lost on me, but I'm not sure if it was supposed to be or not. I just think Idle on his own was maybe not supposed to be funny. It was a very exciting way to get this show rolling.
Yeah, I agree. I loved all the backstage stuff. I laughed out loud when they had the horse back there. I didn't like when he was back on stage doing his monologue. But then again, like you said, I don't know if I was supposed to like that. So I think it was a good way to start the show.
I always thought it was really cool when I was watching the show, when they would do like backstage stuff, I just thought it was cool to show. I like that meta stuff, you know, going back to the dressing rooms and running around looking for somebody and come on, we're live. And it was just so chaotic and decadent. And it was exactly what we assume it kind of is, to an exaggerated degree, of course. And then everything after that, I thought sucked and was pretty irritating.
Yeah, I think we're all on the same page there, basically. Yeah. I'm never sure with Eastern music when non-Eastern people are singing it. Like, even if he was doing, I was thinking, like, even if he was doing exactly right, it seems wrong. Like, it wouldn't have surprised me if Eric Idle met with some musicians in Tunisia and learned this song.
Yeah, it seemed like it shouldn't be happening.
We're now off to the French Chef, and this is a Franken and Davis piece. Dan Aykroyd comes out as Julia Child, teaching us how to make a holiday feast with a roasted chicken. It's referred to as polar demi-sauce or demi-sauce. He takes the giblets and the liver and gives us some advice of what to do with them, including making a liver pate or the bust of a friend at a party. Julia reminds us to save the liver multiple times. She begins to bone the chicken with a very sharp knife and accidentally cuts the dickens out of her finger. Blood starts gushing from the wound and it is flying everywhere as she tries first aid on herself and keeps reminding us to save the liver. Julia makes a tourniquet out of a chicken bone and a napkin or a dishcloth and begins to get woozy. With blood gushing everywhere, she goes to the phone to call 911 and realizes it's a prop phone. Julia then starts remembering a time when she was a kid and she had a dog that she used to give liver to. She then gets so woozy she passes out, wakes up for a split second to remind us to save the liver. I have a lot to say about this sketch. This is, first off, just a really good impression of a television host that I grew up knowing. Julia Child's frequent random advice is there, the smile, the weaving, the highbrow use of certain words like saltines. But then comes the blood. So they have the hose. There's a hose running up from below the counter through the shirt. And, you know, to pull back a layer here, Tom Davis was pumping the blood. I think he was actually using an insecticide. There's a Rolling Stone article where Al Franken talks about the sketch. It's his favorite sketch he ever had anything to do with on the show. Yeah, I've never seen such excellent use of this, you know, blood pump hose thing that they use 1,000 times since, as it was done here with Dan at one end and Davis at the other. That was timed perfectly. The obscene amount of blood was absolutely hilarious. The frequent return to save the liver, a great line. The phone being a prop was great. But what I really liked about this is it's absolutely disgusting, but yet I didn't find it to be gross out humor. And the way this sketch was able to have like that amount of body fluid flying around and still be a very smart sketch is just a work of genius. Very high marks for me. This is an all-time favorite of a lot of folks I know. Just absolutely love this sketch, and I've been waiting for it to come up.
I'm a bit of the opposite. While I very much appreciate the Julia Child impression, the chicken looked like food poisoning ready to happen, and that made me feel nauseous. And then all the blood happened, and I couldn't deal with it. I didn't even remember all the times that he said to save the liver after the blood started, because I couldn't even look at it.
So you were more grossed out by the chicken than the blood?
It was the combination of everything.
I wasn't like waiting for it. I actually, because I loved it. It's like one of those highlight reel sketches that I always saw when I was a younger lad growing up. So I kind of knew it, but I forgot it, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. So I was really excited when I realized what it was. I thought it was hilarious, and I laughed as much as ever. It's one of the greats.
Now, Matt, last week I mentioned that Walter Matthau turned down a sketch.
Yeah.
And that was this one. Wouldn't do it.
Wow.
Now, some sources,
I can't even imagine.
He just nixed it at the table.
I don't think that would have gone well.
Maybe he's like me and he just like shuts down when there's that amount of blood.
Maybe. I think he said something like, I don't do cooking humor or something like really like you're totally missing the point, dude.
Hey, that's a weird reason then.
Yeah. We now go to the Madrigal, and Garrett sits on the same set that Walter Matthau did last week when he introduced Garrett's operatic musical number. Garrett says the response to his performance was so overwhelming, they're going to do something similar again. And this one's going to feature Bill Murray, Lorraine Newman, Jane Curtin, and Eric Idle singing The Madrigal. The four are in choir robes, and they sing what is sort of like a Renaissance choral piece. You know, one of them ones filled with fa-la-las and such. Continue repeating variations on the sentence, "There was a ship that went to sea," followed by fa-la-las. After a very repeated and extending buildup, the song ends very abruptly. I was very impressed by this. Musically, I thought they were pretty darn good. I was asked once to do a similar thing in a show I was in, and I found it very hard to keep track the various like variations on the words and the changes in rhythms and harmonies. Fortunately, I got out of it. Someone else really wanted to do it, so I didn't have to do it. Really loved this piece. Yeah, it was a nice laugh at the end, and I was really glad it wasn't just a complete mockery of what Garrett did before.
Likewise, I love this. Lorraine was phenomenal. They were all great, but she blew me away. It had that little funny bit at the end, but mostly I was just really impressed with their skills.
Well, yeah, me too. Pretty neat little sketch. I was really taken off guard. I like the fact that it didn't go on too long, and it was just cute and charming enough that I could just enjoy it.
Our next sketch is called The Woman He Loved. And the first thing I wrote as a black and white photo of downtown London appeared, I wrote, uh-oh, this looks like a historical British piece that Adrian and I will love and Matt will hate. It was not that. So Prince Charles is apparently missing, and rumors exist that he's living with a 13-year-old girl in a trailer park in the southern United States. We then see Eric and Lorraine in a trailer playing Prince Charles and Vonda. Vonda is sitting there with a box of corn pops, and she's mad at him for not taking her anywhere. He reminds her that he took her to the stock car races a couple of weeks back, but she wants to go with him to Europe when he launches a battleship or something like that. He says that she'd find it terribly boring, and he reminds her that they have to keep a low profile. She thinks it's because his mother wouldn't like her, and he indeed confirms that that's part of the reason. Dan Aykroyd then comes in as a police officer responding to a domestic disturbance in another trailer. Vonda knows the trailer and says it happens all the time. Aykroyd then asks for their names, and when Prince Charles says his name is Prince Charles, Dan keeps trying to make familial connections with Prince Charles and other people with the last name Charles he knows. Prince Charles then starts working on supper, and Vonda apologizes for being mad at him. Belushi then comes in as Lloyd, another trailer park resident who has a shotgun, and he's looking for his quote-unquote tramp of a wife. He suspects that she's running around with someone. Charles and Vonda confirm that she has recently been seen at a local lounge. Belushi's Lloyd then says he's going to go down there and blow people's heads off. Charles then finds out that Vonda has stopped taking her birth control because she wants to be the queen and will bear him an heir who will one day be known as King Daryl. Charles quickly returns to England. We see montages of buses and planes returning to Buckingham Palace. Piano chase music is playing. He immediately then returns and tells Vonda that his mother said, no, he can't see her anymore. And the sketch ends with a Chiron thanking the royal family, notably Prince Charles, and the Department of Parks and Recreation in Parks County, Mississippi. I thought this was a lot of fun. I loved how Prince Charles, in his full uniform, is totally acclimatized extremely well to his new lifestyle and is kind of just being seen as one of the boys. He wasn't sanctimonious, just a member of the community. The humor here was probably a bit more subtle than the audience probably wanted, but I thought it was filled with really great lines like Prince Charles saying to Vonda, you know, do you have any idea what it's like to be commander in chief of the Welsh Guards? And just to clarify, this is not the prince that actually is most likely to hook up with a 13-year-old.
I also liked it, made my own little notes here about Prince Andrew as well, but King Daryl. The thought of a King Daryl brought me much joy. And when he put the apron on over the dress uniform, it was just beautiful to me. It did go on a bit long, but I think I'll let it slide.
Mm-hmm. I didn't like it as much as you guys. I thought it was super too long. I really just didn't enjoy seeing him do this Charles with the 13-year-old girl as much, I guess. Not because of the implication. I just didn't think it was very funny. You know, the only thing I laughed at was that Dan the cop didn't care that this man was shacked up with a 13-year-old girl. Maybe I didn't get it. I don't know. It was just, you know, it was kind of cutesy seeing Eric Idle, I guess, do that play, like Prince Charles as a fish out of water. But it just didn't do it for me personally.
But he was so cool with it. He didn't, like, there was no issue. He had no problem. That's what I really liked. He had no problem, like, making supper in a trailer, you know.
I didn't connect. Well, what can I say?
What an awesome set. It did feel like a trailer the whole time.
It did look good. Totally. Looked great.
We are now off to Kate Bush. Idol introduces Kate Bush, making her U.S. television debut. Kate Bush is a U.K. singer, songwriter, performance artist, /... She does so much. I think it's probably fair to say she was, you know, a child prodigy who was like an underground, like a bootleg hit before she was ever signed by anyone. She went on to become a huge hit in the UK and most countries of the world. US record industry didn't get her until long after she was beloved elsewhere. And even then, I don't think she was ever given her due in the States. Definitely an unsung hero in the world of music, influenced so many people from different, you know, genders and races and genres. And she even influenced a lot of folks who were older than her and had already been making music. The performance she gives tonight is The Man with the Child Eyes. It hit 85 on the US charts, but it hit 6 in the UK. The single was produced by Pink Floyd's David Gilmour. It appeared on the album The Kick Inside, which was released in February 78, and it didn't chart in the US. So Bush performs this in a tight gold sparkly bodysuit while sitting on top of a grand piano played by Paul Schaefer. To say she sings the song is kind of an understatement, because this is like a performance. This is a performance art piece. Memorable, very theatrical, like show tuney, and definitely as much a performance as it is just a song. Musically alone, it didn't do it for me, but the whole package of her performing it put it over the top for me. I really enjoyed this, and I really liked it as well because it's so different from what we've seen on the show really since the beginning. So thumbs up here.
I also loved it. I did know the song. That jumpsuit was amazing. What I wouldn't give to have a jumpsuit like that. And you can just see how much she's influenced other artists. Like, I put my little notes here. It's giving Taylor Swift Evermore vibes, because my kids are obsessed with Taylor Swift, as kids are. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I loved every moment of her performance. She's just so cool.
It was pretty cool. I knew the song coming in too, but I didn't expect this performance, which I thought was great. And nice to see Paul Schaefer sitting around on the piano. Interesting. I didn't know David Gilmour produced it. That either. I thought he just kind of like discovered her and paid for her demos. So that's fun trivia for me. But yeah, I was looking forward to it. And you know what? I don't think I'd sit around and put on 8 Bush records by myself, but I was really into the performance. I do like a couple of her songs a lot more than this. Anyway, it's neither here nor there. This was really good, but like you, I'm not independently listening to this super often.
Yeah. You know, I read somewhere that a lot of the reason she didn't have the success in States is because the States didn't know how to market a performer like that. You know, Adrian mentions Taylor Swift, and I immediately thought of like Madonna and Gaga and Cyndi Lauper and all these folks that have come since who were about a whole package and not just the music. And I can totally see her influence in that regard.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think her influence is quite widespread. I just peeked at her Wikipedia page here, and it's a large entry.
Yeah, 100%. Like, if you've watched the Eras Tour movie, there's parts of that that just scream Kate Bush, and it's awesome.
Our next sketch is What Do You Insert Random Sound Effect. Eric Idle actually wrote this 1 year before, and it appeared on Do Not Adjust Your Set, one of the few sketches I've actually seen from that. It's on the Monty Python. It's on two of the records, and it's also reminiscent of the song I'll Bet You They Won't Play This Song on the Radio, which Eric Idle had on the, I think, Matching Tie and Handkerchief or the Contractual Obligation album. It's a game show hosted by Eric Idle, and it features Tom Schiller as Lord Lupus. Schiller actually had lupus, or has lupus, and Gilda Radner as the Deaconess of Detroit, and she's actually from Detroit. This game show is based on other game shows, and it's just kind of about sound effects. The categories are all sound effects. The rules are all sound effects based. Very convoluted. When you hear a ding, you get a buzzer. And if you want to interrupt with a rooster sound you can. It's just absolutely fast-paced Eric Idle firing these sentences that all end in a sound effect to us. Not much to say, really, other than that it was a game show with very convoluted rules. Eric Idle was excellent here. The sound tech guys were awesome. And I even thought Gilda and Schiller were hilarious sitting there as contestants who totally were understanding what these rules meant. And there's even a few arrow shots in there.
Likewise, really, really enjoyed it. It was very Monty Python, very British, and it was very much like the show Countdown that's on UK TV meets QI meets Monty Python. And I enjoy all of those things. So it was great. I loved how he just went with it. I could listen to it forever.
Yeah, it's just one of those nights, where I bitted the odds, didn't care for this at all. Just kind of drove me up the wall, actually, with all the sound effects again and again. I couldn't take it. I don't want to sit here and be too potty mouth about it or anything. But no, I really found it very aggravating.
So weekend update. We have a bumper with the photo. It's a photo of three women in bikinis washing a car. Jane calls it autoeroticism for horny cars. We then find out that tonight's episode of Weekend Update is brought to you by reincarnation canned milk from the evaporated milk from dead cows. With San Francisco getting so dangerous, Tony Bennett had his heart picked up and moved to a safer place. I actually audibly laughed at that one. We then go to Celebrity Corner, and it's Gilda appearing as Valerie Harper because Rhoda was canceled. Valerie says she's okay with it, and Bill asks her how she really feels, and Valerie says she doesn't want to talk about it, and then Bill asks her to talk about it, and Valerie says she's really angry. The show was canceled because of anti-Semitism. Bill points out that Valerie Harper is not Jewish. This comes as news to her, and Harper is basically acting as if she didn't know that she wasn't Jewish. And then she asks, well, why do I talk like this? And that actually was one of those huge things that was something of a bombshell at the time, that Valerie Harper wasn't actually Jewish, but Rhoda Morgenstern was. And also, as I've mentioned before, I, as a child, thought Gilda Radner and Valerie Harper were the same person. Chico Escuela finally joins Update. We've seen Garrett before as Chico when he was the guest speaker at a Knights of Columbus meeting. He's now in the form that he's best remembered as the sports anchor for Weekend Update. Chico says his famous line, baseball's been very, very good to me. And he says it's also been very, very good to Pete Rose, who's now getting $3.2 million. Says he doesn't know anything about football because in his country, football is soccer, or soccer is football. Hockey he doesn't know, but baseball he does know. We get a commentary from Jane about the Equal Rights Amendment, and this has been something that's been mentioned since the very beginning of the show in 1975. Jane suggests that women stop performing oral sex until the amendment is ratified. Bill asks why he should suffer because of some state legislatures. And Jane says that Bill is basically just thinking of himself. Bill says that he calls for a moratorium on men doing oral sex to women as well. Jane is dumbfounded and says to forget what she said. Mayor Koch promised to clean up the city, namely the source of a lot of the bad stuff, which was allegedly 42nd Street, with debates raging over the effectiveness of Koch's actions. SNL sent their own correspondent, Father Guido Cerducci, to investigate. Guido says it's definitely getting worse. He went to a spot called Nude Wrestling, which was what it said it was. He met a girl there who said for $20, you get a half hour of naked wrestling. Guido, having not gotten much exercise since he arrived in New York, decided to give it a try. He thought it would be with the girl he met at the door, but it turned out to be with another customer, another fella. And Guido says he won 2 out of 3 falls. He then shows some souvenirs, including this cool like apple lighter thing that he bought on 42nd Street. And he tells everyone to go to 42nd Street, but to use their own judgment. Few good jokes in this, not many duds. It's so nice to finally see Chico. I love how he keeps calling her Hane. It's definitely touchy in a way, but Chico's awfully charming in another. I love the way Bill said rats in a story about a herd of rats taking over a bus. The ERA commentary with Bill and Jane was really funny, and I actually thought Bill winning this one was kind of funny too. Not the best Father Guido, but a pretty good one all around. Pretty strong weekend update.
Definitely a solid weekend update. Gilda Radner as Valerie Harper was beautiful. I always assumed Valerie Harper was Jewish as well because of Rhoda, but hey, I didn't know. Valerie didn't know. Baseball has been very, very good to me. It had everything I would want in a weekend update, really.
I also thought it was really good. I thought of right away that opening joke. The opening joke was reincarnation milk. That was pretty funny. I thought of Cronenberg's. Did you ever see David Cronenberg's Crash?
Oh, yeah. That's the person that's obsessed with car crashes.
Yeah,
that was good.
I think James Spader was in it. Was surprised that they went back to another Jim Jones joke after the audience booed the last one. I thought they'd just never bring it up again. The idea of a celebrity interview for the Celebrity Corner is pretty fun. And I also used to have a mix-up. When I was a kid, I would mix up Valerie Harper and Valerie Bertinelli of confusion.
I love that.
Chico got a pop. I thought that was cool. And I was excited to see it, too. And obviously, he was really funny doing it. I really like that he calls her Hane. And I really like that the subtitles I was using reflected that. I laughed out loud at Jane backing down immediately at Bill when he gave her a little wink. Oh, the Father Guido Sarducci thing. I actually thought it was the best one I had ever seen. It was the one I enjoyed the most. It got the biggest laughs out of me. First, I thought it was going to be a video segment where he was going to be down there. So I was quickly disappointed. But I still thought it was the best one I'd ever seen. It certainly made me laugh more than any of the others did.
Candy Slice. We're in a recording studio where John Belushi plays Phil Malone, a record producer, who's annoyed that his scheduled artist is 6 hours late. When Eric Idle, playing Justin, the act's manager, says she's an artist and just has to be late, Malone says he's never been made to wait by Hendrix or Jim Morrison. Jim Croce made him wait once, but it wasn't his fault. Jerry Aldini returns. It's Bill coming back as Jerry Aldini or Aldini. And he's a record company executive from Polysutra Records. And he asks Malone to wait another 5 minutes. When Malone says no, Aldini secretly gives him a bump of coke, and Malone is cool to wait. Justin opens the door to the studio, and Gilda falls in as Candy Slice, who is basically so baked she can barely stand or respond to anything. Justin insists that she is fine to record, and basically has to hold her up for a big spell there. Candy then goes over and borrows a microphone from Jane, who, along with Lorraine, is playing one of her backup singers. She borrows a hairbrush and combs the hair on her head and then her armpits. Candy then demands a smoke. The music starts playing. Candy can't produce the song, so Eric Idle gives her a bottle of liquor. Belushi, as Malone, comes out of the sound booth to see if there's anything she needs. She then spits alcohol in his face and just keeps kissing him a little bit here and there. She then says she wants some gum. They give her some gum. The track starts again, and Candy stops. She then demands that Jane's character cuts her hair. Belushi, as Malone, comes out with scissors and does just that. Jane is then placated with one of Jerry Aldini's bumps. Candy then starts singing the song, and it's called If You Look Closely, You Can See My Tits, but they don't ever really say that. They perform the song, a couple of verses of the song, the sketch goes out. I thought this was really, really funny. No one else could pull this off as well as Gilda. There is also some really great supporting players here. Jerry Aldini's always a hit with me. Belushi's Malone was good. Idol was excellent. Jane and Lorraine were very good. They created two very different characters with so few lines. A very strong, memorable piece. Allegedly, Radner spitting the liquor on Belushi's face was an ad lib. There are some issues I have with it, and it's not about like cocaine fueling high sections of the entertainment industry, including this very show. This whole thing is a parody of Patti Smith, who wasn't really like this. It's more of like a parody of her look. I find this to be a bit of a mess, and I don't know if it was meant to be that way. It did go on a bit long. The audio levels were terrible for the song. I maybe found this could have been tighter. I did laugh a lot, though, and I did enjoy it, and I really liked Gilda's Candy Slice. But there was something unhinged about it that I didn't like as much as I thought I could.
I actually liked it a lot. It felt very punk rock, everything about it. Gilda was incredible. After she spit, I think she broke and tried to hide it, and that just continued to crack me up. Lorraine and Jane as backup girls were phenomenal. And when she actually starts singing, she could have had a punk career. Gilda ruled.
Yeah, but this is the exact kind of unhinged that I've kind of been. Do you remember when I used to complain so much in the early seasons? Like, when is this show going to get kind of more unhinged? This is kind of what I was waiting for. Pop for Jerry Aldini. And when I realized that the whole show is just going to be them doing cocaine, I was like, this is pretty fucking skeezy. When backstage is that wild, when this is your life, it's going to come out in the work that you're doing. I'm not surprised to see season 4 has been pretty coke soaked at times, I have noticed. And this is one of the sleazier sketches I've seen in a bit. And you know what? It's what I've been pining for. I like it. I think it's great late night television. Patti Smith wasn't like that at all. Yeah. So anyway, big hit for me. This has been a fun continuation of the sleaze of season 4.
I think I was a little bothered too by, in some ways, it being such a blatant knockoff of Patti Smith, but yet Patti Smith being nothing like that. And so many other artists were, including a couple people that were on the stage doing the sketch.
But seriously, she was better than a lot of musical guests have been.
And that was another thing I wondered too. Was this like, are we testing the waters for Gilda to do to punk what John and Dan are doing with blues right now? And there was a lot of questions.
That would have been so cool.
I was glad to see Jerry Aldini, though. Consumer probe. Jane is back as Joan Face, and she interviews Irwin Mainway, who now sells endangered species fashions. The audience is happy to see Mainway, and they clap for him. Mainway says using endangered species for fashion is justified by the old saying, nothing lasts forever. We then get a fashion show. So we have Gilda coming out wearing an African brown hyena hat and trumpeter swan slippers. Jane notes that there's only 60 trumpeter swans left, and Mainway corrects her and says 58. Bill comes out as Wayne wearing an alligator shirt made from an endangered alligator, and his gloves are made from endangered New Jersey Pine Barren tree frogs, and his golf club holders are made from Trinidadian lizard. Lorraine then comes out wearing a Galapagos fur seal jumpsuit and an Asian snow leopard car wax glove. And those are especially rare because none have been seen since 1972. Mainway himself is wearing a human skin vest with human teeth buttons. Jane is completely disgusted, and she says she hopes Mainway gets eaten by a big fish. There's a new set here for Consumer Probe. I thought this was a great idea. The thing about the Mainway things is I've been noticing sort of diminishing returns every time he comes out. For me, the Mainway sketches have gotten worse. And I think the reason is, you know, there's part one, which is the ridiculously endangered or ill-conceived products, which is still there. But number two, Mainway is doubling down on why they are actually okay to use. I think in these later sketches, we're not getting as much of his excellent doubling down. All things considered, though, I did laugh at this. I enjoyed the fashion show very much. The bit where he said 58 after she said 60 and there's two dead swans on Gilda's feet got a big laugh out of me. I enjoyed this.
I liked it, but I liked a lot of other things tonight a lot more. Although Jane saying, I hope you get eaten by a big fish, it's just beautiful.
Joan Face, one of my favorite recurring characters for no particular reason. I just always get a kick out of her being Joan Face. I think Mainway Fashions is a great idea. The swan slippers got a big laugh out of me, 20K a piece. And yeah, 58 was hilarious. And I really liked the fact that the shirt logo was an embryo. That's fantastically evil. I guess I felt like just when I think, because yeah, I was thinking about for a second, like the Mainway diminishing returns, but this sketch just pushed it that little extra notch further for me to make me really, really like it. Human skin, $50 for a vest. Come on.
The cheapest thing on the catalog is the human skin, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, it's not endangered.
True. Yeah. We now go to a movie, and the director's name, I think, Aviva Sisson or Sesson, I forget how it was said, who was the editor on The Ruddles with Eric Idle and Gary Weiss. Bill plays a flamboyant musical agent who's trying to get a musical guest to come and perform at a venue. This guest turns out to be a team of dogs whose multi-note barks fit nicely into other songs like Hava Nagila and The Age of Aquarius. quick, neat bit. Not much to it. Didn't blow me away, but I did laugh at this.
Yeah, I thought it was cute. I liked how Bill was trying to sell it for bar mitzvahs and stuff. Glad it was short, but glad it was there.
I didn't get it. I thought it was hideous. It looked like a cheap-ass student film. Fuck, I didn't like those dogs at all. No.
Our next sketch is Cochise at Oxford. This one's written by Brian McConaughey. Eric Idle plays an Oxford professor who's teaching a class. I think it's a philosophy or logic class. He asks if people would rather be in a London onion cellar or to have Thomas Hardy's furniture swelling up. Cast plays a bunch of his very keen students. They go through these very convoluted bits where they sort of follow a Socratic path to nowhere. Bill Murray enters as Cochise. And it is the Cochise, the Native American warrior, who is a new student. And he sits at the table and doesn't say a word as they go into a chat about natural law. And they discuss things that are and are not natural. Idle begins demonstrating a hopping duck when a tomahawk is suddenly thrown at him and lands in the chalkboard a mere inches from his face. Idle asks who threw it, and the sketch is over. So there are obviously problems with Bill Murray playing an indigenous person. And I really wondered where the hell this sketch was going to go. I don't remember ever seeing it before. And it went nowhere. But I think it was not supposed to go nowhere. I think it was supposed to be a weird sketch. This has a lot of excellent wordplay and a lot of great characterizations in here. The cast were absolutely awesome as like keener Oxford nerds being very philosophical and Socratic. It kind of reminded me of the scene from Holy Grail with she's a witch, burn her, that sort of wordplay. Yeah, I really enjoyed this one. This sketch was almost cut at dress rehearsal, but Belushi enjoyed it so much that he allegedly, it was in an interview on Ian Talks Comedy's podcast with Brian McConaughey, where I think he said Belushi threatened to quit the show if this sketch didn't make it. I don't know how that makes you guys feel, but I enjoyed the weirdness of this a lot.
That's interesting that Belushi threatened that, because wasn't it Belushi in the monologue that told him to be funnier with the professor or someone?
No, that was Dave Wilson, the director.
Okay, so they still obviously had to put the professor sketch in. It couldn't have been cut because they talked about it in the monologue. And I wonder if he did make it funnier.
He was pretty funny.
He was. I did enjoy it, but it didn't really feel like it did anything.
I know what you mean.
Yeah, I agree that it didn't feel like it did anything, but I did not find it funny. I thought some of his, you know, the voices were kind of cute. And they were all quick, and it was like they were like good performances. And maybe this is just really misplaced in the show. This is not an end of the night sketch. That's for damn sure. Don't be throwing wordplay on me this late in the show. give me something funked up, you know. I thought this was just poorly themed, poorly timed, and I didn't find it funny.
We're now back to Kate Bush, and she performs Them Heavy People. This was released on The Kick Inside. This was only released as a single in Japan. It somehow seems strange, but yet oddly appropriate. Bush is in a trench coat and a hat, and she performs an upbeat piece that's said to be sort of her thoughts on religion and religious teachings. An excellent performance, but a kind of a strange song. And someone was in the room when I was watching it, and they were like, "What the hell are you watching?" And I was like, "Oh, it's Kate Bush singing the song." And they were like, "It's terrible." And I was not feeling it was terrible. It's just I could see it and they couldn't. So I definitely will remember this. And I did like it. I definitely enjoyed the performance. I don't know. Again, it's like if I heard the song by itself, I don't think I would get nearly as much out of it as I did seeing the performance.
Yeah, it was a weird song to pick, and a weird placement for the song right after Cochise, and then to be ending the show with, it's a great song and a great performance, but it was a weird place for it.
Yeah, I didn't get it either, Keith. This wasn't the song just didn't do it for me. And but I mean, I'm no Kate Bush fan. I like her just fine. And I think Running Up That Hill was one of the better songs of the 80s. Yeah, I'm just not sold in on the whole thing. And it really has to be the right song for me, is what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to sit there and listen to an album and appreciate it in an analytical way. But I'll listen to a good song that I like. And she's mm-hmm. got a couple of them. This isn't one of them.
So we now go to The Good Nights, and the audience gives a huge ovation for Idle and the cast. I don't remember seeing one this big for the cast at a Good Night. But again, it was a very electric audience and very appreciative of what they saw tonight. So let's rate this show. The host, I thought Eric Idle was excellent. In some ways, it was his best hosting gig, but it does feel like he wasn't in this one as much as he was in his other ones. He had his stuff. And the sad part about Eric Idle is it's history sort of forgets how much he hosted early on and how key he was in these early episodes. I mean, this is number 3 of 4 in the first 5 seasons. I think the only knock against him is that he was not out front and center as much as a lot of the hosts are and as much as he is. But that being said, I don't think the show suffered from that.
Yeah, I thought he was great. There were other cast members that I did think were better than him tonight, but I thoroughly enjoyed pretty much everything he was in.
I'd be with you guys on that. His performances were super energetic, and he seemed, you know, he was all in. But certainly, I don't think it was my favorite Eric Idle episode, that's for sure.
So the music, it's really hard to compare Kate Bush to your average sit on a stool and play a guitar musical guest. There's so much more to these performances than there are to like 99% of what we've seen so far. In a lot of ways, this reminded me of like your Leon Redbones or your Tony Basils, Neil Innes, who we saw in the previous Idol episode, or even like Sun Ra, where it's about more than just the music. I certainly wish there was more Kate Bush and more of the Kate Bush ilk in this show, where it's truly a stage where you can perform and do something that you wouldn't necessarily do on like Carson or you know, Good Morning America or whatever. Both songs were unique. They were definitely tremendous pieces of performance art as much as they were just songs. The music alone didn't put either over the top for me, but the whole package of her performing and her performance really gets high grades for me.
I agree 100% there, Keith. If it had just been the songs and her sitting there, it would have been weird and not good. Whereas where it was her performing the songs, it was still weird, but it was good.
Yeah, I really liked that first performance. I thought that was really good. And you're right, there's certainly a visual aesthetic to it. I mean, it's a performance, and it's I wonder what it's like these days. I haven't been to a Kate Bush concert. This always seems like a bit of a recluse. In any event, second song did not do it for me. Did you switch the songs? Is it better? Yeah, probably. But they didn't. But it's, you know what? It's still a shame because I think her really kind of more new wavy early 80s stuff is a little more fun. So sorry, she's not going to be around too much.
Mm-hmm. All right. So what is the worst sketch of the night?
It's going to be a controversial choice for me on that one. Because for me, the worst sketch of the night was the French Chef, and I'm sorry.
No, that's okay, buddy. Matthew.
Oh, it was that stupid game show with the sound effects. Oh, my God, that was so irritating. Just pointless. Like, I get it. You want to, you know, press the button, get some good timing down. But this shouldn't make it on TV. You got something else. You don't need to just make noises. Come on.
I agree with you, Matt, and I'll be honest, I changed my mind multiple times during this recording session. It's been a couple of options there for all different reasons. This one gets it because of it pre-existed twice, and it's a rehash of that. There was a lot of good in the sketch, but again, it's not original to the show. And with everything else that was on the show that was so strong, or things like Candy Slice, which had problems for me, but was still quite good. I had to go with, yeah, what do you sound effect. What was the best sketch of the night?
For me, it was Candy Slice. Yep. It just tickled me in ways that I didn't expect it to. I loved how unhinged it was. Gilda blew me away. I could have kept watching it.
Excellent.
This is kind of tough for me, though, because there was... There's three that I really like, so I'm trying to play this quick elimination game. I did really like Candy Slice, but I really, you know what? I'm going to kill one, Rick, because I really like Weekend Update, too. I thought Weekend Update was super strong, but for the sake of picking a sketch, I do like to defer to a sketch over the Weekend Update segment, mm-hmm. personally. And I really liked French Cooking, so it was either Candy Slice or Julia Child. For me, I guess I think what did I laugh at more? But is it, should it always be about the comedy? Should it always be about the laugh? Sometimes can it be what I found more, just more interesting or more fun to watch? I know it's a comedy show. Maybe I shouldn't be so taskmastery about the joke segment. So I'm going to go with Candy Slice because it's kind of the sleazy shit I've been waiting for a long time now.
I went the other way. I went with French Chef. The debate there, Matt, you're picking two iconic sketches from this show. There's two sketches that are always talked about from this episode, and it is Candy Slice and the French Chef. And you're taking one that is one person, super simple, and one that is a huge group and completely off the wall. So it's another one of these comparing apples to bowling balls.
It's fascinating. Both so good.
I went with French Chef. Like, French Chef is just so simple, and it's just Dan and a hose and an insecticide thing and a bang on impression. I also grew up watching Julia Child, so it was like there's that as well. So what's your star? Who's your star of the night, folks?
Gilda Radner.
Very good.
Mine was Dan Aykroyd because of Julia Child, and I thought he was a good cowboy in that Cheryl sketch that I otherwise didn't care for. He was pretty good off the top, too, and I thought the Mainway was really good.
You and I are on the same page there, Matt. It's the Julia Child. It's the beginning. Just another variation of Mainway with blonde hair. Mainway himself, I did get a kick out of that cop. Just a lot of good stuff from Dan tonight. A lot of good stuff from Gilda. Overall, I thought this was an extremely strong episode. I thought it was an excellent host. Love the ensemble feel of the episode. We got the debut of Candy Slice. We got Chico, where we come to know him best. These were sketches that really complemented each other. Nothing felt like it was similar in tone to anything else on the show. Very fun monologue and a suitable musical guest who I thought fit really well. One thing that really jumped out on me was that the production people really had their working boots on this week. We had that trailer set. We had a really awesome classroom set, the new consumer probe set. The show also had an electric audience this week. The few complaints I have are very moot. Some of them are actually more based in today's thought. Setting some of that aside and trying to think from the time, it puts it in a different perspective. A couple of sketches might have been undercooked, a couple might have been a tad long, but this to me was one of the better episodes we've seen on this show, and I'm giving it an 8.5.
I have to agree. I was wavering between 8 and 9, so I'm just going to go with a round tidy number and go with the 9. But it was a great episode, great host, great guest, enjoyed pretty much every single sketch except the one that my own personal problems can't deal with that much blood. So, yeah. Great episode.
Well, for those who have been following along at home, I had a lot more problems than you guys did tonight. So while I did enjoy it, there was too much. Like, I didn't enjoy the cold open enough. I thought the monologue was half of an idea. Julia Child was great. I did not like that Prince Charles sketch. The music was just okay. I could almost leave it out. It was a little bit inconsequential to my score. I thought the game show sucked, but Weekend Update was super good tonight. And right after Weekend Update was Candy Slice. And then there was Consumer Probe. Like, bang, bang, bang. Way to finish it off strong in the latter half of the episode. But, ooh, I thought it struggled in the first half. So I'm going to go 7.5.
And that's still pretty good coming from you.
Yeah.
It's your second highest mark of the season so far.
The strengths were really really super strong strengths.
Yeah. So with my 8.5, Matt 7.5, Adrian's 9, this episode winds up with an 8.3 from us, making it our highest episode so far this season. And the folks over at the IMDb gave it a 7.9. So we like this more than they did. I'm not surprised. I thought it was a damn fine episode.
Yeah, me too. Some weird, wild stuff.
They're definitely trying new things, which I'm really appreciating. They definitely didn't rely on the stock characters as much tonight.
Right. And that's I think that's another reason for a tip o' the cap. Mm-hmm. Is that they didn't roll out the same old stuff. It felt fresh. It felt like a fresh, exciting, weird, live late night show. And even though I didn't always like the sketches, it was always in your face, and it was never sleepy. I still think that sketch with him as the schoolmaster was really poorly placed, but other than that, it was always interesting.
And they should get bonus points for the reincarnation evaporated milk from dead cows.
Absolutely. So, Adrian, thank you very much for joining us this week with another look at Eric Idle. Really, really happy you could be here for this one.
Always a pleasure. And thank you so much for having me on Eric Idle and Kate Bush Night.
Adrian, would you like to join us again for our next episode?
I'd love to.
Hooray. Matthew, do you know who's hosting our next episode?
I don't. I love it when you tell me.
Adrian, do you know who's hosting our next episode?
I don't. Are you going to tell me?
I am. It's a Christmas episode. And Merry Christmas to you both. The musical guests are Peter Tosh and Mick Jagger.
Ooh.
And our host making his fourth appearance is Elliot Gould.
Ooh. Wonderful.
Matt, you've been up and down with Elliot Gould, far more up than down. How excited or not excited are you?
I guess I'm not very excited. I made a little face. I kind of wish they were moving on to hotter, fresher things. Mm-hmm. And Elliot Gould doesn't scream hot and fresh. Imagine.
Oh, I think he does to me. I do enjoy Elliot Gould. You loved him in season one.
I did.
So Matt and Adrian and I will be back in about a week. But until then, we'll be wrestling on 42nd Street here in SF.